Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is Robert Romani, who we're just going to call Romani now, right?
Yep.
And we just met. I don't know anything about Robert, but there is quite a ball of energy here. Oh, your cell phone's on. That's okay. Turn it off. Cell phones are part of life. I don't get so offended by them anymore.
No, but I...
Okay, so talk about you. I asked you what you do, and you said...
What do I do?
Yes.
I generally go by what I'm doing right now. And right now, I'm an usher at the Music Center downtown.
Oh.
Sorry about that. But
the Disney one?
Yes.
I just saw that for the first time yesterday.
Yeah. Isn't that a weird-looking building?
Yes. It's fabulous. Okay. Go ahead.
Other than that, I'm a musician, play guitar. I act when they're paying me.
So what is it? Okay. Let's start from a little...
Sure.
When did you first know in life that you had any particular direction to go in? And what was your first musician experience? And
well, probably when I was a kid, because I was always a bit of a ham.
Uh-huh.
But I think when I was about 16, I went to my first concert.
Uh-huh. What was it?
A band named Styx.
Oh.
Which, you know, Crystal Ball, Come Sail Away.
Uh-huh.
I'm dating myself, of course, but... as I'm sitting in the crowd, I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is definitely...
But had you ever played an instrument
before? No. My parents tried to get me to play piano because my sister played and played badly. But when they tried to get me lessons, the teacher would take my hand and like bang it on the keyboard. So I punched him in the face.
Wait, how old were you when...
10, maybe.
Oh, you were that old. And so you punched him in the face.
Yeah,
but crawled off. And what?
And crawled away.
Oh, what made you want to do that?
Punch him in the face?
Uh-huh.
Because he was slamming my fingers on the keyboard.
Oh, just for that directly?
Yeah, just like,
don't touch me, push me
around. Sort of like that.
It felt like pushing you around?
Yeah, I guess.
And so he never came back?
I was 10. No, he came back. I just quit.
Okay. And your parents were...
Not happy.
Uh-huh.
I was the black sheep. I was the rebel in the family.
Of how many?
7.
Oh, wow. 7 children.
Yeah.
And you are which birth order?
3rd from the top. Oldest son, 3rd from the top. But I was the bad boy.
So how did that... Go ahead. Talk about that. Everybody loves a bad boy.
Yeah. I was the hellion. I was the one that they were, you know, going to have the most problems with.
So what were you doing? I mean, there's a difference between being a bad boy and a mean boy.
I was bad.
You don't look like you could have been mean.
No, I was mean.
Were you? Okay.
I don't want to get into all that. I just did some stuff.
Just get into what you want to get into.
I quote Jim Morrison in this, where I was always looking to test the bounds of reality. You know, and I would push my folks to see just how far I could go.
Can you say what kind of things you did, or you'd rather not? I mean, I don't...
Let me put it this way. When I was in high school, I got kicked out of a Catholic high school because I gave the nun... the finger.
Oh.
And then to get kicked out, I took a Sharpie and drew a 999.
But upside down.
Yeah. And then when I gave him the finger, it turned out
it was
to
the
be
whole
666. Yeah. So it was like, that got me kicked out. So.
So what would have been different in your life to make you not want to do that with this nun? Or was that just unavoidable?
I think it's a combination of things. I think one, dealing with the disability, and then two, my parents, telling me what to do, expecting something of me. I I'll put it right out. I don't consider myself an atheist, but I don't believe in God. I think Jesus was a complete and utter lie. It sickens me the way people go on. You're seeing it now. The craziness of ideology and religious thought, and I'm just free of that. But my parents,
Catholic
were
family,
both Catholic,
so, yeah.
And mom was Irish, dad was Italian, so you got a double whammy of, And I just totally rebelled against all that. And
you were the only one of the kids who did.
Oh God, yeah, because the rest of them all, still do.
And yet you say, "Oh God, yes."
Yeah. Yeah, but when I say "Oh God," it's more like I'm saying like, "Oh damn."
It has no
meaning.
I understand. Yes.
I got in trouble because I used to say, "Oh Jesus Christ." But I justify that growing up and watching my football and baseball with my father, and every time somebody would do something, Jesus Christ.
Oh sure.
And Bill Cosby had it, and yes, I'm going to quote Bill Cosby.
Go ahead.
Now, Bill Cosby always did this skit where he'd go on where he thought him and his brother were Jesus Christ and God damn it, you know, because his father.
Oh, their names.
Yeah. Yes. So some of us don't hate Bill.
And you got through the – so you're entitled. So you said difficulty in dealing with the disability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, what was that?
Oh, that's a whole can of worms.
Okay. You don't have to. I just think
from a very young age, people would say to me, you have to learn to accept it. And mm-hmm. I never knew what that meant.
Uh-huh.
So if you can't explain it to me, how am I supposed to, mm-hmm. you know, accept what? You know, where I think I was just bound and determined to be everything that – I think I was bound and determined to be what everybody – you know, what anybody's expectations of that was.
Mm-hmm.
Where
– So you spent time trying to satisfy other people's expectations?
No, I did the opposite.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand which way you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, if mm-hmm. people thought that you were supposed to be – years ago, I met an agent. Who mm-hmm. dealt with models for an all disabled talent agency.
Oh, what is that here?
No, this was back in New York.
Oh,
believe
okay.
it or not.
Because I met Gail Williamson recently.
Right. Well, Gail, it's different. This was about 10, 12 years ago.
Oh, so you know, do you?
Yes, I know Gail very well.
Okay. So
yes.
Do you do acting and then through her as an agent?
We're not actually officially signed, but she's working with
okay.
me. So
I just didn't know where we connected.
Yeah,
yet.
No,
okay.
I met Gail back in 1998 and I love Gail. Gail's an awesome, awesome individual, but Gail's advice to me, mm-hmm. it was really funny. In 98, Danny Murphy and myself both came out, you know, there was a media access meeting of some sort. And Danny and I were the two who came out at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Gail's advice to both of us was, don't do it. Don't come out here. You know, she said, as a mother, I can't advise you to do this. It's not.
Come out from the East Coast, you mean?
Yeah, and move
really?
Out here.
Uh-huh.
Now, the difference is Danny had Peter Farley as a friend. So he had a major connection. Me, I just had long hair and a cute face. Thank you. I was much better looking years ago. And, you know, I had really great headshots.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was very funny. Everybody was – people were kind of impressed, but I didn't know anybody.
So she was saying don't come out because it's such a brutal industry to get started in?
And it's hard out here.
Yeah.
It's hard to live out here.
Yes, it is.
So I didn't. Danny did. I didn't.
But so Danny had Peter, but you had Danny.
No, I didn't have Danny because I didn't know him. I didn't,
I never really knew him, nor did I meet him. I missed that beat. Okay.
No. So I didn't. I didn't come out. And then in 2007, 2008, I met this woman back home mm-hmm. and we decided to get engaged and move out to California.
Mm-hmm.
It's the decision I regret to this day.
Do you?
You know, I'd have been better just put LSD straight into my veins.
Oh, ouch, but.
Yeah, you get the point. And that's all I'm going to say. But, you know. It's been hell out here.
Oh.
I consider myself, I've always related to cartoon characters
mm-hmm.
and I consider myself, in relation to my journey to LA, I'm like Pinocchio, you know, and unfortunately I need to find Geppetto, but
yes.
I'm, you know, the little crippled boy who wants to be real. I'm the little puppet that wants to be a real boy. And, you know, I've met every god-awful person along the journey. I've met, when we talk Gail, Gloria Castaneda from Media mm-hmm. Access, even David. You meet a handful of people that are extremely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But for every one of those, you meet 10 others who are just, you know, they come out of the rat holes.
People, they do, and people behave not so much in, nastiness to you. They behave from themselves, not to you.
Well, that's just it. It's all about them.
That's very right.
Self-centered. Yeah. They're very narcissistic.
Right.
But
you feel that.
Well, I'm the person who I am, and I internalize all of that.
Yeah, that's what I mean by feel that.
Yeah, and for me then, it becomes, this is all about me. Because I must have – in fact, let's go back to that – Catholic upbringing.
Okay,
where,
do it,
you know, you only bring in what you, you know, you reap what you sow. So if you go by that philosophy, you know, it almost seems that you're bringing all this about you. You're bringing all this negativity. You're inviting all of this. And then you encompass that and you become that. And then, of course, you've got everybody you meet who tells you you're negative. You're this, you're that. And,
that's funny, you don't feel negative.
I'm not. I'm real. I'm just real.
Yeah.
But to people out here, a lot of the people that David knows and associates with, everybody wants positive, positive, positive.
Yes.
Even if you're not positive, you've got to portray and exude.
Oh, I know. The phrase fun, fun, fun. You hear that from people, and I never understood that.
Yeah.
Because I think there's nothing more fun than telling the truth.
But this is the way people are out here. These people can go to a funeral out here. And, you know, and what are you going to talk about? Oh, it's a beautiful day.
Oh, don't even start me.
Well, that's my point.
I know.
Let's not forget the fact that somebody's died or, you know, all the feelings of
losing somebody. Well, I think people make small talk because they're afraid of going any different. That's part of it.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't
either.
Okay.
It gets to a point where it becomes nauseating because it's all about being positive. But then at the other end of that, is the idea of being too negative and
so there is a balance. I mean, there's the reality of acknowledging each.
You got it. And I haven't figured out which
I can see
which.
That. Yeah. So what would you want? What do you do now? So you're an usher now,
right?
But you refer to the fact that you were a musician,
right?
And do you do recording things or sound things?
No, I'm a guitar player.
Okay.
I got my degree in music ed.
Oh.
Straight out, when I was telling you before, it was, you know, for me, you know, you had the whole birth of MTV, and even before
that, well,
right,
oh my goodness.
Even before that, you had, like I said, you got bands like Styx and Van Halen and Journey and Foreigner and Led Zeppelin and Aerosmith and all this, and I was just consumed by all of that, and mm-hmm. I wanted to be that,
mm-hmm.
and I looked at these guys and I'm like, damn, they're ugly. And I look at myself and go, well, shit, I'm about as ugly as they are. And they've got all these women and, you know, and it's like, wow, I mean, that was what it was all about. I wanted to play guitar to get women.
The results.
Because that's what, in my young 16-year-old mind, I thought that's what it was all about. I didn't
care. Turns out that's pretty much what it's all about in every guy's 16-year-old mind.
I think right now.
Everybody you talk to.
I think right now it's all about that in 45-year-old guys.
Yes.
David Lee Roth, who can be a major schmuck, but the guy said something years ago,
what?
And it always stuck with me. He said, you listen to these idiots like Springsteen or Elvis Costello, the pretentious morons who go on, oh, it's all about this and it's all about that, you know, trying to be greater good and all this. And David Lee Roth said, it's all about getting laid. That's what it is. And he said, if anybody tells you other than that, they're full of shit.
Well, you know something? In terms of evolutionary biology,
mm-hmm.
that is what it's about.
Yes.
It's getting, you know, getting your seed to dominate the forest.
But you have guys like Springsteen who think they're, you know, saving the world.
Well,
take a look at the world. You ain't saving anything, buddy.
But then there are some people who really are the music.
I think what it all comes down to is, like, you know, I was just listening to, you know, I had the radio blasting on the way here.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing like the sound of a screeching guitar. We had at the Hollywood Bowl where I worked this summer, we had Van Halen play two nights there. And despite, you know, the crap with their lead singers and all, you just listen to Eddie and what he does with that thing. And it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It brings tears to your
That's
eyes.
That's right. There are those people.
Yeah. Because it's amazing.
Space is interpreted through sound and you are part of something enormous.
This morning it was really funny. I had the TV
on. I heard
on.
Someone like that last night, actually.
Right.
Emilio Palame.
I know him.
Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
We've met. Yeah.
The man is the music.
It's funny because this morning I woke up, I always have the TV on. I think I fall asleep with it on. And they're going on about this Bieber kid. Hey, you know, it is what it is. But I work downtown and at the Hollywood Bowl, and I've got the LA Phil, the LA Orchestra, the LA Opera, and, you know, all of these amazing, talented, uber talented people
mm-hmm.
who don't get the time of day from the public or people that would go to Justin Bieber.
Yes, there's so much unacknowledged talent. Yeah,
but it's amazing when I have moments that I get breaks and I sit and I listen to some of this stuff. It blows your mind what some of these people do, and yet you see large portions of the public spending all their time. But one thing I learned this summer working at the Hollywood Bowl. Now I probably worked 100 or more shows, and there's one thing I learned.
A little louder.
Oh, sure. There's one thing I learned. My opinion doesn't matter.
Oh.
No, it doesn't. When 17,000 people are willing to pay whatever money they pay to go see Kanye West or Duran Duran, you know. Things that I wouldn't waste my time on. I just have no interest. But 17,000 people are willing to do it. And a bar line passed back to the escalators. And, you know, most of the time people come out of there, they're smiling, they're happy. That's what matters. And because what we lose with all this crap in our, especially out here, the fascination with
stardom,
fame and stardom and all that, is that it is about, music is about making a connection to people.
Yes.
And we lose that. And
well, you know,
I lost that.
You hear kids sometimes saying, I want to be a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
It's their goal. And there's, my blood curdles. I want to say, wait a minute, what about the music?
Well,
but people want an easy
acknowledgement. I taught guitar. I have a music ed degree from Rowan University. And I taught guitar for about 10 years. And I even ran a learning center at a place called Mars Music, where I got to hire the teachers and do the curriculum and what have you. But when I was teaching, I would have kids come in, and the first thing I would ask them is, what is it you want from this?
Uh-huh.
What do you want? If you could play any song today, what would that be? Most of them couldn't answer that. I had one, and I forget the girl's name, but I had a girl come in to me, probably about 12, 13, right? And I remember her favorite at the time was some guy named Usher. And I was laughing because at the time, when I was growing up, I had worked in a movie theater
and was
an Usher.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, well, it's not much of a career. It certainly ain't much of a name. And I didn't know who this guy was and didn't really care either. And I still don't, sorry, but... Her comment to me was, man, I want to be a rock star.
Yes.
What do I have to do? I want to show everybody. Because she had apparently issues at home, and she wanted to be a rock star.
So, but that's the telling thing. I want to show everybody.
Yeah.
That's sad.
No, it's not.
No?
No, it's not. It shows fight. It shows determination.
Oh, you're seeing that side of it. Okay.
But here's what I said to her. I said, well, you know what? I can't help you with that. Okay? But I said, in order to do that, the road starts here. And it's what you have in your hands. And all I can do is show you how to play that thing in your hand and how to understand what it is. That's your car. That's your key. You want to get to the next level? You got to learn this first. That I can give you. I can't give you the other. You know, because I said, look at me. If I were there, I wouldn't be teaching you, now would I? So, you know, it's six of one and a half a dozen of the other. At first, it bothered me because they would say that. And then I learned, no, just what I said to you. It's not a bad thing.
Okay, that's really a nice way to look at it. I appreciate that.
Well, because we are in a society, and I'm going to relate that to acting out here in L.A.
Okay.
We're in a society that is fast-paced, fast-moving. They want everything now. They want it right away.
Yes.
You know, they want to go from point A to point D. With no interruptions.
The 30-minute solution.
Right. Out here in L.A., one of the things I'm encountering among the acting, especially among the community that I'm in with disabled actors, is everybody wants to be a star.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to be famous.
Right.
What has nothing to do with that? And then I see that against some of the folks who have roots in New York who talk about the art and want to be actors. Well, that's because it's a different ball game.
Well, so you think the culture is different enough that it fosters?
Well, I came from back there, so
yeah.
I knew it. So my education back there was to be good at what you do.
Yes.
Learn what you do and be good at what you do. Now there are some from back there who talk about methods like Meisner and all that nonsense. whatever your thing is, that's fine. But you still have to understand what it is you're doing. And there's a whole process in that. And what I'm encountering out here in LA is nobody cares about any of that. They want to be stars. They want to be rich. They want to be famous. And they, whatever way they can get there.
Yes.
And you see them on Facebook. Yeah. I have them. You know, some of them I've cut off because their narcissism and their BS. They're posting photos of themselves, and especially with the disabled. Oh, this one wants to learn how to walk, and this one's going to get determined. And then there she is half naked on her, you know, and it's like, okay.
But it sounds to me from what you're saying like you're a very good teacher.
I was a good teacher.
You got tired of it?
I burned out completely.
Uh-huh. Would you ever want to go back to it?
No, and in fact, I just...
That sounds a little sad to me because...
Well, it is and it's not. I just met a woman, and she asked me to take her on as a student.
Mm-hmm.
So she's hot. So I said, okay, well, yeah. But she came to me with the premise that she wanted to impress some guy.
Oh.
Well, that should have been the signal to me to say no. But she's kind of hot, and I figured, well, let's... see what happens here.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter, but I figured she'd be a one and done. A one and done is how I refer to people that would come in for one lesson, realize it was too much, and you never see them again.
Okay.
And I had a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
She took maybe two or three lessons and broke up with the guy that she was – apparently she wasn't trying to impress him. She was already sleeping with him or something was – I shouldn't say it that way, but – you know, because she'll probably hear this, but something was obvious. I don't care. But
you're not saying her name. That's okay.
No, but there was obviously something already going on, and then she broke up with him. And 20 minutes before she was supposed to show up at my place for a lesson, I get a text message saying, I broke up with him, so I'm not coming. You know, and there you go. I haven't heard from her since. You know, that's the kind of nonsense, you know. And it's funny because, like, I think one of the greatest motivators, as we talked about earlier – to get, you know, to learn an instrument or to do anything is to, you know, attract a person of the opposite and or same sex or somebody that you're interested
in. Well, I mean, that's true all along. Awesome. Look at the cosmetic ads for women.
Yeah. Well, sex sells. You know, I mean, but to, you know, to get somebody's attention is a great motivator. So I'm not against that.
Right. But you also, you know, it's certainly possible that out of 100 people, there's only one who was really grabbed by music and directed by it. And
for me, I burned out teaching. I burned out completely. I lost interest. I wasn't picking up my guitar. There was nothing that was fascinating for me because I basically worked in a lot of these, I call them chop shops.
What is that?
Well, it's like the McDonald's of music lessons. You work in all these local stores and, you know, these franchises, and they want you to come in and bring them in and bring them out, give them what they want. You know, I have a music degree, so I also want to kind of – I don't want to give them the McDonald's. I don't want to give them the burgers and the fries.
Oh.
You know, if anything –
the real thing.
Well, I try to compromise and give them something with some nutritional value. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just teach them the song. I want to teach them the chords for that song.
I see.
One time I was teaching a kid. The kid actually, I met him years later, went on to get a music degree.
Nice.
And he credited me. And it was really very nice. Because I remember the lesson specifically. He came to me. He wanted to learn a Hendrix song. And, you know, Hendrix is – the guy was, for the most part, a genius at what he did. And the nice thing about it was, as I'm teaching him the song, we're teaching you what in music we call a 1-4-5 chord progression, which is, you know, if you took a major scale, it's the 1-4, it's the major, the dominant, and the subdominant chords of the progression.
Mm-hmm.
It's the strong chords,
mm-hmm.
And we were doing this, and then it changes key. There's some transposition going on. So I got to teach this kid what we call the theory of secondary dominance, which is the movement from the one key to the next by use of the second chord through the 5 chord, which comes back to the second, and it's kind of...
And then you land in some place.
Yeah,
right.
And then you go back. Well, he did it again. And I just said to this kid that, you know, it was really odd to see somebody do that twice, but Hendrix did it. But the man knew so well what he was doing. And it's like Eddie Van Halen. It's the same thing. These guys know so well music, theory. They know their instrument beyond, you know, you don't see that a lot anymore. And it's just fascinating that, to me, that's teaching. And when I got to do that with this kid, it made that half hour go by for me.
Yes.
You know, yes. One time I taught a kid and we came in, he wanted Green Day, to learn Green Day. And my next student didn't show up, so the kid got a 45-minute lesson. We went through every song on that album in 45 minutes. That doesn't say much for Green Day, that it took me 45 minutes to decipher 11 songs. Same thing with Nirvana. It's once you figure out what the tonic is, once you figure out what key they're in, it's very simple.
You know, what I'm hearing here is that you are authentic, looking for authentic.
I want real.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I want them to be entertained, and I want to be entertained as well. You know, I mean,
I hope you find it. Well, you're young yet.
Not really.
Well, compared to me.
Well,
I mean,
but I'm getting there.
Well.
But it is what it is. I mean, you know, I always give people a hard time with Springsteen because I can't listen to the guy. I mean, he sounds like he's got hemorrhoids. You know, he sounds like he's trying to, you know.
Yeah.
And, but I grew up, for me, like I said, it was a band called Styx.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had these five guys and each one of them could sing with these super high falsetto voices, but depending on who the singer was, mm-hmm. each song could sound different.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated with that. But here's guys that could really do something. Well, you look at Led Zeppelin, you look at even Guns N' Roses. I mean, these guys know what they're doing and they're good at what they do.
Yes.
And you look at Springsteen and it's like, he looks like he just, you know, he popped out from under the hood of his car and says, oh, they will go play guitar.
Well, I saw a couple of years ago a documentary about the Butterfield Blues Band.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that documentary?
What was it again?
It's I forget what it's called. Something, you know, the blues in Chicago, and I forget what the title is. And Nick Revanitis was there. And
no.
Oh, if will you do me a favor, and it'll be doing you a favor. Mm-hmm. Get a hold of this.
Okay.
I'll find it and email it to you.
Yeah, give me the name.
These guys were just what you want in life.
Yeah.
In terms, I'll send it to
you. Well, that's why, it's funny because that's like now.
Butterfield Blues Band. And we used to,
right.
You know, we'd know the band names and we didn't so much know the individual musicians.
But that was and that's what I liked. To me, it was better to know the band than to know the musicians. But somewhere along the way in the 80s, these guys got, I mean, that's why I think you saw the breakup of all these big bands from the late 70s and the 80s, the Journeys, the Styx, the Van Halens.
But when you see their history and how they came to be, not came to be brilliant, but got the brilliance polished.
But they were a band.
Yes, but
they
then
were
unit. That's right. But then when you learned who they were individually, get a box of Kleenex.
Some of it. I mean, if you really looked at some of these people,
yes.
I mean, people go on about the Beatles. If you really looked at John Lennon, guy's a disgrace in every conceivable way. But yet you stick him with Paul McCartney and there's nothing but brilliance.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's it's better just to have them.
Oh, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be the band.
Right.
But I'm saying Well, you learn something though when you break it down.
Well, but to me that's what I'm getting at. It's their egos that get in the way. And they need to be known. And you know, I'm sitting here wearing a Led Zeppelin t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated with Robert Plant because the guy decided that once his best friend passed away, that was the end of the band. And even though he did his own thing, as did Jimmy Page, there was still that entity. And it's leave that alone. That stays itself. Then they go do their own thing in a different way. I mean, that's,
yes.
You know.
I can see that.
But all these people, I think, you know, they have other ideas or whatever, but I think there's an ego part of it. Maybe not them is the bad example of egos because I wouldn't use them. But, yeah, with some of these other guys, I would. You can't fault the Beatles because they decided to go their separate ways. What were they going to do?
Right.
So,
right.
Okay, Paul McCartney went and did his thing. And,
right.
But, you know, you look at guys, you know, the David Lee Ross of the world, the Steve Perrys, you know, these guys, they're functioning on some other different level. And it's like, bring it back. Come back.
Let me ask you something. Just to take it to love letters, because I have a thought. You know an awful lot.
Sometimes.
Well, just even in this.
Right.
Do you ever write letters?
Yes.
Who do you write to and what do you do?
Right now, I'm just writing letters for trying to get a job.
Okay, well, that's you're laughing, so, but that's important.
No, I know, but I'm writing. Yeah. I got a back in my car. I've got about 12 things.
But
to
do you
send
write?
Out.
But is this email that you're calling?
No, I'm actually. I'm going back to the old fashioned way because the whole email thing and it's not getting me anywhere. So we're going back to the old fashioned way, the East Coast way.
Okay, good. So I had a thought just listening to you. Do you, I'm thinking of a series of letters to yourself about what you know. Just one a week.
Right.
About some musician. Mm-hmm. Your affection, your opinion, your insights into their playing. Stamp them and mail them to yourself at your house. And at the, I'm telling you something, at the end of, at the end of 2 years, you'll have a collection of history.
Right.
And the best history is the letters we find written by the people who know what they're talking about.
Right. Right.
Oh, can I send you home with a homework assignment to think about?
Well, it's funny because right now, one of the things that I'm doing...
Let somebody find it in 100 years.
That'd be scary. No, it was funny. There. I don't know if you're familiar with a book called The Artist Way. The author was a woman named Julie Cameron. And one of the things that she talks about straight out is doing morning pages, which is sitting down and free writing 3 pages a day, every day. And I did it for a number of years. I tried it. And it's not easy. You have to set aside the time. You have to do it.
You have to set aside a time for this too, but there's no. But you don't have to set a length.
No, so and you didn't with this either. But
I thought you said
it said 3. Uh-huh. You could do more, but you had to do at least 3.
Okay, but I'm saying you can do a half a page.
Right. Right.
A week and still have – because that's easier to
but
do.
But it's very similar.
Oh, will you call me in a year and tell me what you have and share it with me?
Well, one of the things I've been doing is writing. I've been working on scripts.
Oh, good for you.
And
okay.
I just recently completed a pilot. And
that's one of those doorknob comments.
Yeah. And I'm talking to – I mentioned Gloria Castaneda, formerly of Media Access.
Yes, I know her.
And Gloria – I told Gloria, you're my casting person.
Okay.
So, like, Gloria, just as like Gail, is just one of the people that you meet out here that you know you can count on and you know you can trust.
Good for you.
You know, and I said to her, you're my person.
Okay, so one of the doorknob comments is we've sat here and we've visited and we've talked for a while, and then as you're about to leave, it's, oh, and by the way.
Well, the other thing I should mention is, as you're talking about doing radio, I'm involved with Michael and Sharon Steiner. And Mike has something called Diverse City Entertainment. Mm-hmm. Mike did a radio show with Kathy Buckley and Jerry Jewell.
Oh, sure.
And a couple others. And that didn't go very well, I guess, in the end. So they decided to go a different route. So we're doing something with Auntie Angel of the Push Girls.
Oh, yes.
This is going to be a strange combination.
Okay.
Because you got me, the ultimate rock, long-haired rock guy.
Yes.
And she's, you know, the rap queen, and I hate rap. And so, you know, we're calling it Roll with the Punches. And
but what you have in common is you're really solidly creative people.
Well, we're going to find that out.
You're going to find that out if you're appreciated, but you've
Well, yeah, it's different. So we're trying to get that off the ground. We're kind of in rehearsals and developing the idea and getting ready to go into the studio and do some promotional.
So do you want to say the name of anything for people to keep an eye out for here?
Well, like I said, it's called Roll with the Changes.
Okay.
And Roll with the Punches. I'm sorry, Roll with the Changes is an REO Speedwagon song. It's called Roll with the Punches. It'll be on going through CBN.
Uh-huh.
And
do you have a time when or just we
no,
should stay
we
tuned?
No, we don't. We're okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, you'll see the updates on Facebook.
Okay.
But yeah, I know I'd be punished if I didn't mention that's
of course you should. I would be one of the ones to want to be punishing. Of course.
Well,
Sometimes it's nice to say it out there.
Yeah, I'm just kind of one of those where, you know, I'm not there until we're doing it.
No, I understand that.
You know,
I understand that.
I want to be there and ready to go. And
okay, well, I want to thank you for doing this with
me. Sure, no, thank you.
And so maybe at some point in the future when you have more to tell about, you'll come back.
Okay.
Would you? Let me just let the invitation stand.
Thank you.
I hope you do a series of, as long as you're writing, what would hurt that you take another 15 minutes and you know, write an opinion about music each day. Okay, thank you, dear. I appreciate this a lot. So for now, this is Janet Gallen and
Robert Romani
saying goodbye. And please remember that if you think you need to have a special occasion to write a love letter, there's almost not a moment in life, in a day, that's not a special occasion to write one if you think about it in the right way. So until next time, goodbye.